Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today used to run a promotional product company, which then put him into contract manufacturing. And when he was running his promotion company, he was supplying Fortune 500 companies. So suddenly he discovers Amazon. And ever since that time, he's been in Amazon space. And today he's the founder and CEO of AMZ Sellers Club, which is a brand management service for Amazon sellers. And outside of work, he likes to keep busy, learning new things. He's one of those people who likes new challenges all the time. And also photography and travel. But he's famous for something else. And those who are listening, they're not going to see this. But he's known as the guy with beard. And so with that, everybody, meet my guest, Norm Farrar. Welcome to the show, Norm. So tell us about the story for the beard and how you are known. Give us that first.
Actually, that's kind of funny. It started out, I think I'm in Canada. So during the playoffs, all the hockey players grow their beards out. So we usually follow suit. But anyways, during this process, I didn't shave it off. I went over to a friend's house and we started talking. He's another brand guy. And he said, I was telling him how, you know, I'll reach out to people after these events and nobody remembers me. And, you know, I always got to explain how, you know, how I met them either at a presentation. And he goes, you got to come up with a brand, like a personal brand for yourself. And it was like, I'll grow my beard. And it happened. And all of a sudden I'd be sitting three rows back and I would be talking, like just saying, hey, cause I always like, you know, questions and talking to people and speakers. And so I was in the third row and, oh, I saw you, and they would remember me. So anyways, it started out maybe with an inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, you know, now it's like a foot and a half or something like that.
I mean, you know, this is interesting because I was watching a TV show the other day, and in that show, there's a lawyer, you know, well recognized, one of those established celebrity type lawyers, and he's going out with this woman, and this woman has a little son, and he says, "So, what's your name?" And the kid goes, "Malcolm." Yeah, he says, "No." He says, your name is not Malcolm. From today on, you are going to call yourself Malcolm. And he says, what do you mean? He says, listen, kid, everything in life is about differentiating yourself. You have to stand out. You have to stand out with how your name sounds. You have to stand out with how you dress. You have to stand out with how you talk. Everything is about your personal brand. And that's what's going to give you value. So when you say, you know, I was sitting three rows back and everybody recognized, suddenly, you know, I remember that scene. So it's about, everything is about brand, right? These days, it's all about brand.
Right. And, you know, not only is it easy for the people I reach out to, but people reaching me because they know me as the beard guy. You know, they don't know me for my company. They know me as, you know, that Amazon beard guy. And so it helps out. It helps out with connections and networking. It's turned out to be, well, put it this way. My wife hates it. And she tells me that she would like me to cut it off. And I said, I can't. This is my moneymaker.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've got a lot of things to cover today based on our conversation. So everybody listening, so what we're going to do on this one is Norm is extremely knowledgeable about all kinds of things with Amazon. So he's shared with me some of the Amazon nuggets that are either hardly used or not used efficiently. So we're going to go pretty fast and we're going to try to touch on as many of those as possible. But first, I want him to share with us what he does to increase his profits. So Norm, first tell us, how do you increase profits?
Average new seller goes and competes at a very low cost. The one thing I try to do is always increase my price, have one of the higher prices.
So, you know, our Amazon commission is always the same, 15%. Well, depending most categories.
Yeah.
Your FBA fee is always fixed. Your FBA fee is FBA. There's no saving money on that. How you buy the merchandise is, of course, you know, that's a big deal. But whatever the price is or your cost is, that's locked in. So really, the only variable left, the two variables left, is how much you're spending on advertising and how much you're selling the item for. And of course, it starts right at the top, which is the top line. And that's what you focused on. You work on pushing the price up.
So right. That's your correct formula.
So how do you do that?
It's 100% perception. It's just perceived value. And very, very few brands do it. But the ones that do it right are making money.
Okay. So here there is this is a very important concept, because people associate value with price, but they are two different things. How much you pay for something is totally different than how much you think it's worth, right?
Right, so, exactly.
So how do you get people to think it's worth a lot more than the current price?
Okay, so really quickly, I'm just going to talk about tiers. I take a look when I go into the marketplace. First of all, I've got to decide what tier I want to go out with. And I'll give you just a quick example, Dead Sea Mud. If you take a look at Dead Sea Mud, there's three tiers. One's between just around $7, and it goes up to about $10. And that's for an 8-ounce to 16-ounce bottle, okay, plastic container. Then you see the next grouping, and there's some prices in between, but the next main grouping is around $19, $20 up to $44. And then the next main grouping is $70-ish, $74 up to $95. It's all the same Dead Sea Mud. It's all about perception. So those people that are just trying to move product and cannibalize their product and their profits, they come out at the lower end. I take a look at it and I say, where can I fit in? If the product's good and I can package it differently, just like my beard, so people remember it, then I'll try to get up to the top tier. If it's an average price with average packaging, I'll try to launch it in the mid. If it's just a test market, I'll throw it out and I'll see, you know, just how much I can sell. Now, I don't normally do that. I do research. I find out where I want to go. And usually what I'll try to do is those products that are in the top tier, what are they doing? I do competitive analysis. I look at their packaging. I might even order it in. And just to give you an idea, the one product that's killing it at $95 is 3.5 ounces. But if you look at their listing and you look at how they laid it out and their slide deck, it's all done perfectly. And then if you take a look at the six, it's actually 674, I think, the last time I looked. It was a crappy image, crappy listing, and it deserves 674. So one thing I want to say, and this is really important, if you have a great product and you're coming in tier two or tier the first tier or the second tier, you're missing out. You're missing out big time. A lot of new sellers do that. If you've got a bad product and you're trying to move it into the second or the top tier, that's another way just getting a lot of one-star reviews. So you have to make sure that the perception is actually perceived, like the customer service, the customer experience has got to be exactly that.
Okay. Well, Norm, you delivered so many good things here. I don't want it to get lost. So first, I want to get more clarity on mm-hmm. the tiers. So what you are doing is, tell me if I'm interpreting this the right way. So what you are doing is you're taking your product and then you're going looking at your competition. And then your competition, you're doing this search, you're doing this by search term, I'm assuming, right?
Correct.
You search, and then you see who's coming up. So those who are coming up on the first page, that's your competition. And then you're taking everybody organically, let's say 20 listings, and you're taking those 20 listings, and then you're taking the price, and then putting them in three different tiers. Third tier being the highest price, first tier being the lowest price. And then you kind of creating your own tiers in terms of, you know, putting from this to this, I'm going to call it tier one, tier two, tier three, right? That's the first approach in terms of seeing where you rank. Is that right?
Yeah, you're competitive. This is the first step in your competitive analysis. And one of the other areas that I should explain is if you're going out and you're selling, or if you're searching for the primary keyword, okay, so it's bully stick, or and it has to be a buying keyword. If I say dog chew or bully stick, dog chew will have huge search volume, but nobody, buyers aren't going in there to buy a bully stick. They're going in to buy a chew toy or chew something, rawhide. Bully sticks are one thing. What I do is I go in one step further. I'll try to go and it's too hard to compete with bully stick. Then there is the secondary, I call it the primary keywords. And those ones are like organic bully stick, grass-fed bully stick, odorless bully stick. Those are my headings for my silos that I'll start to eventually filter out. The keywords that I go after are the high volume long tails that fall under odorless. It could be grass-fed odorless bully stick, okay? And then I'll start taking a look and seeing where everything's falling into place. That's where you get, especially for new product launches, an ability to compete out there, and you get to see exactly where those three pricing tiers are. You'll never get it right if you just go with the primary keyword or even the primary long tail. It's always the longer tail keywords. It just makes that much easier for competing, and you know who your competition is, so you can pick off the prices that way, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to translate this a little bit. I understand. Well, I mean, you know how it is, because there is like implied meaning of something. And as soon as you sit down and say, okay, well, let's do this. Now suddenly, you know, you draw a blank. So, competitive analysis being you are doing this keyword, or I should say search term by search term. What I heard you say, which is extremely valuable, is it's a buying keyword. It's not descriptive keyword that has volume, but it's a buying keyword, like you mentioned, ballistic. So, and then also you're not doing just one set of analysis. You're doing multiple, and those multiple analysis will be for different long tail buying keywords. That's right. Where you're creating. So probably if I was doing this myself, I would probably do between 8 to 10 different variations of it for 8 to 10 different keywords. And then let's see where that overall tier structure will end up. And then I decide, okay, where do I fit in, right? That's a much more thorough approach to me. Would you agree?
Right, I agree. And what you'll notice is there's definitely going to be a pattern that comes in very quickly. And you'll start to see those three terms, those three tiers. And then you'll know exactly what you need to do to get into those tiers just by, and this is all, you don't want to do this when your product's already in stock. This is something that you want to do while you're developing your product and looking for the product opportunity. And there are so many opportunities out there. Like, as I mentioned, Dead Sea is very competitive, but if you get in with the right keywords and the right tier, you can do a lot of damage. And I also have done this with, this is with one of my clients. They came to me with a chef's knife. And here's a perfect example. They came to me, they were a brand new seller. They were out for about half a year, and they have a $16 landed product. It was packaged horribly. So it was just in a plastic clamshell with a cardboard backing, which made it look really cheap. The tier that I looked at was between $19 and $34, $44. And he was priced out a little bit higher than that at $49. I looked at it and I said, why don't we just repackage this, make it into a hard, rigid packaging, put some EVA foam, so a soft foam on the inside, and a foam covering. So when you open it, you have to unveil the package or the unveil the knife. It looks really sharp. The knife was beautiful. And so what we did with that is we took it up to not $49. It went up to in $10 increments, but we got it up to $99. We got it to $124. And today it sits between $97 and $124, depending on the season. And then we said, what happens if we go back to the manufacturer and ask for other products like this? And they came back with the same style of knife. So it's a Damascus steel, very, very, very expensive, but $16 landed, a $3 wooden case with just another look. It was an outside container, kind of looked like an eye box. And this was the premium version, $16 plus $3. And we were selling that out at $224. Oh, and if you take a look at these knives, exactly what I told you, there's 3 points. And the high tier, like ours that was out there at 224, there was knives out there, similar knives selling for much higher, but they had a name brand behind them. And we weren't suited to compete with those knives yet, but $16 plus three, just by judging the keywords that we're going to come out with, was up to $124. Same knife, just except it had different texture, up to $224.
Yeah. You're paying more in Amazon fees than the actual item.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. So now let's move on to the second part, which is I caught something. It's so valuable. It's worth repeating. So what I heard you mention is, if you have a great product or a good product, make it better so that you can improve the price, put it in the top tier, on in tier three. And currently it may be in tier one or tier two, but it's a good product. And you push it up to tier three by improving the packaging, the perception. That's where the perception comes in. So you do the things that will improve the perception of it and then price it higher. However, if you have a bad product, even if you improve the perception of it, put it in the best packaging, that's the easiest way to get one-star reviews. I mean, this is so valuable. You don't think about it. So you can't, basically what you're saying is, doesn't matter how well you package something and how much content you put around it, you're not going to sell crap on Amazon. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, because you get returns, you get, yeah. I mean, to me, this is a huge deal. Okay, so let's now, we promise we're going to cover a lot of nuggets. And we can talk all day long about, you know, how to do this. Of course, packaging is a big deal. Before we move on, I just want to pick your brains on something.
Sure.
So, this is a difficult case, okay? I want to hear, and for those listening, they'll identify with it because I'm sure people end up in this kind of a space. So I had a client a while ago, and they became a client in September of 2019 for Amazon private label. They sold masks, okay? But their focus was power sports like dirt bikes and things like that, woodworkers and things like that. Nothing to do with, you know, what masks became famous for. It was all about, you know, using for either a hobby or a particular thing. So then COVID hits. Of course, everybody wants masks. They are selling like by the hour, hundreds of them. So fast forward now, 3 years. Mask category is saturated. The prices have come down. So prices in the category in general have come down. Now, these guys have been around for a long time. They are certified, legit. So it's a good product, high quality product. All the tests that apply to them, they pass with incredible numbers. So it's a good product. Packaging is good. Everything is good, except that the price has come down in the entire category of masks. So what would you say to this particular case, as well as others like it, where prices in general in a category come down because it suddenly gets saturated? So how do you deal with a case like that?
Well, I don't want to call it a brown bag product, but I've bought a lot of masks and I've seen how they're packaged. You can definitely repackage these masks. And look, I don't know if you've heard of this one chip challenge, but just because of the packaging, you get one little chip that's really hot, and not saying that anybody eat it, but it's $10. For me, I would take these masks and I would repackage it. If it's anything special, I would create, Diane Bolster always talks about hypno terms or hypno words, which are only used in your packet or your listing. Make it stand out. Show it where your product is different. And even with those masks, think of babies, pets, and your personal safety. Wouldn't you pay more? If I saw a mask, and I did this with a stupid light bulb, these orange background light bulbs, I hunted around and I paid more because I wanted the best, but it was the same manufacturer probably. With a mask, you'll pay more for better packaging, just perception. That's one thing I would do. You could definitely drive traffic over. And you mentioned that they were in the sporting business and all that. I would almost repackage these and gear them more towards their demographic. So build up all these different personas and now start targeting them that way as well, if there's a market for it. But perception, even with a simple surgical mask, can be something that you can sell for a lot more than what's on the marketplace. And this is just my experience. If I want to go in and I see 100 masks for $5 and I see another one for $49, there's got to be a reason for it, right? But really, there doesn't have to be. You can go in there, have really high perceived value, solve a few pain points in your bullets, show them over in your images, do some really great videos. And, you know, videos, I'll do a 3-minute video and I'll cut it up into 10 segments. And I'll just have little pieces that'll be in my related videos. And I'll put a thumbnail in there and I'll show the benefits of whatever it is. I'll do a competitive analysis. You can do that. You just can't say anything really bad about your competitor, but you can compare 3 or 4 different masks. And of course, yours is always the best. And you can do that right down. So there's that. You can offer at a higher price, just something. Again, this comes into perceived value. This is a marketing thing also for the Dead Sea Mud. Let's say you wanted to get into it. Same thing with the mask. If you enter at that really high third level or the highest level, the top level, when you first enter into it, how do you make it look better than what it is? Or how can you get people to buy? You create a pricing standpoint that makes it look like, wow, that $95 Dead Sea Mud is now available. It's psychological. People see the pricing in that second tier. Now it's available here and they can save $20 or $30 and you're still making a killing on it. And that's the same thing here. You could save $10. The $5 masks are still $5 masks. You're selling them for $50. You put in a digital coupon, which only 66% of the people will press on. And you bring up the perceived value and the people are thinking they're getting a great buy. That's just one thing I would do. And then I would also, if I had the ability, if I was brand registered, I'd be showing all sorts of pain points and all sorts of really great lifestyle images, either in my slide deck or over an Amazon post. So those are some things just to bring up, even even in a commodity, what you can do.
Okay, I understand. So that coupon idea is a good idea. By the way, if you have a coupon that call it clip coupon, right? So those coupons, they show it on the search results page, available with, you know, blah, blah, percent yep. coupon. That's great. So let's dive into the nuggets. So give us your most favorite nugget that is either least used or not used efficient.
Well, there's a lot. And I can touch into some of Amazon's own internal tools. But on the Amazon side, one of the things that people aren't using right now is Q&A. Q&A are indexed. They're indexed. So you can create a question, just like a press release. You can create the question, spin it any way you want it, have the keyword phrases in there, have the answers, and have a friend add the answer. It is not against terms of service to do this at all. So just asking questions and getting answers, no problem. But here's the key. How do you get people to engage? How do you get people to watch? Do a video and upload yourself saying, or the seller, if you have the name to the brand, or if you're just doing it, stand in front and say what the your answer is. So the person asks the question, which could be your neighbor. You go out there with a video camera and just do the video, upload it with your answer. And these are all indexed. So that's another thing. If I had another big gold nugget, is that nobody.
Before you move on, because yep. I want to understand. So creating Q&A, walk us through how does one create a Q&A? Where do you go, in Seller Central, or is it somewhere else?
Okay, so you can go into, this is just on your listing itself. So when you're creating it, you can go and you can see, add a question. Okay, so somebody, your neighbor or whoever, can just go in, add a question, and it's right on your listing. So you'll see this. I forget where it's located, but if you scroll down, you'll just say Q&A, and you can see 2 questions, 5 questions, 15 questions, and all of these questions get indexed. So if you have a variety of different keywords that you want to help get indexed, you can just go in and write them out. So what we do is we'll go and do competitive analysis. What are the pain points for our competitors, and what's the positive to our competitors? And we'll spin it whatever way we want it using keywords. And these keywords could be just, you know, what we talked about at the beginning are the keywords that we were doing to these lower hanging fruits, right? The longer tail keywords, they could be the keywords that we're targeting.
Okay. So this is on the listing page, mm-hmm. you know, the public page. Right there on that page, there's a add question option.
Yep.
So as the seller yourself, adding a question there yourself, that's not against terms of service.
I would get somebody else to ask the question. And it could be anybody. And then it's best practices is the seller respond. And there could be 10 other people that respond too, but you definitely want to be the seller responding to it. And then you'll see that there's an area to add a video.
That's a very good tip. Yeah. So don't create the question yourself, but have somebody else. How about this somebody else? Because, you know, you can't get people to leave review for you, you know, friends, family, blah, blah. That's against terms of service. So getting someone who shares the same network or has a, you know, similar kind of, you know, a Prime account, you know, open link, getting one of those users to leave a question, is that acceptable?
Way that we do it is I have family members that even work on our team, and they will do all the questions. So one person can even ask the questions. It's not against terms of service. I think from everybody that I've talked to about this, is that Amazon actually likes it because you're providing information about your product. Yes. So, yeah. Yes.
I was just going to say, so it all goes back. So I had a gentleman on the show. His name is Brad Moss. I always bring him up. He was the business team lead at Amazon that built Seller Central. So any question I asked him, he would always answer. So anybody listening, go check out Brad Moss, M-O-S-S. Great guy. And every single answer he gave, it's always, okay, let's now think about what Amazon would think. What is the main goal? The goal is customer experience. So does this improve customer experience? So if it did, then that the answer would be yes. So what? Just as you said, Norm, it's you providing information. The fact that your keywords are getting indexed, that's a fringe benefit. Of course, you know, you're going to put some words there. But at the end of the day, people read these questions. They read the answers. And if they are providing information, Amazon is only going to support it, so rather than be against.
And they know that video has a lot more engagement than images, right, and or type. So if you can be now and have the person on your listing longer, that's better for Amazon as well.
Yeah, great. Okay, so nugget number two.
Okay, one of the biggest things that I don't know, I'll give you a stat. Google Business Profile. Google Business Profile, nobody uses. A lot of people think that it's for bricks and mortar. 4% of businesses in North America use Google Business Profile. Out of that, just think of how many brands that you know of that use Google Business Profile. This is the powerhouse. This is the secret sauce. And you can create a very simple profile. You can do it yourself. You don't have to hire an agency, but you can do it yourself. And all it wants is you to provide content. You provide content. You provide it, and it's for brands. So you can create a brand with Google Business Profile. And then what happens, and everybody's seen it, it's, it comes up on the right of your screen when you're on your desktop. And here's the beauty. You know that keyword that you're going after? If you have a relative information out on the internet and somebody types it in, you're going to, and if you're number one, you're going to take up three full swipes on a mobile phone before you get to the next listing. You own it. You dominate it. And so if you can go and know, if you know what these keywords are and you start to put it out there and write good quality blog material and you post it, and you can repurpose this as well over to Facebook or wherever you want to, this will all get brought back to Google Business Profile. So here's the beauty. Google says, with this anyways, is, wow, this is really relevant keywords. Why don't we start doing clickless searches? Clickless searches say, okay, let's go back to the Damascus knife. We do something about a Damascus chef knife. Well, is a chef knife also a carving knife? Is it a sushi knife? And they think you're relevant for that. Even without writing an article, they'll start promoting those keywords. And now you've got that material that could go right back to your Amazon account. Google Business Profile has an anchor URL. So what's an anchor URL? It's the URL that you want it, you tell it where to go. So all of this is giving either your website promotion, your Amazon product promotion, your Amazon storefront promotion, but anything that you post on the internet. So I'm on Facebook and I put in my anchor URL. Google will immediately, within seconds, index it. And here's the last, oh, there's lots more, but we got to keep this short. But here's the other thing. Google will also ask you for categories, ask you for brands, products, and it promotes it, just like Google Shopping. So if you put in that bully stick, you can put in a variety of different bully sticks with the URL. Going back to your Amazon listing, But you could do another one that goes over to Walmart. You can do another one that goes over to Shopify. The beauty of it is that you can have multiple pictures of the same product being supported and being sent to different areas. So it's not just your product listing. In fact, you can have the listing and the storefront if you want. You can send it back to posts if you want, but you know, just if for most people, it would be the listing or the store or Walmart or their shopping page on Shopify. Nobody's doing zero. I've gone and talked around the world about this. And after I talk, I bet you 1% maybe do this at all or even look at it. And I can tell you another thing. It only takes 10 minutes a day. Now, this is consistent. You have to be consistent when you're doing it. But 10 minutes a day, you'll start to see traffic, measurable traffic that you can measure in your Google console and your Google search console. And you can see it. Why did it pick up? Oh, well, just funny how it happened when you started using Google Business Profile.
So you are creating a business profile, and in that business profile, you're using your keywords. And then as anchor URL, you are linking it back to your listing.
Yeah.
Or so, your Amazon storefront. It could also be Amazon storefront, right?
Yeah. So it's going to ask you, what's your business name? XYZ Bully Sticks. Okay. It'll ask you for contact information. It could ask you for hours. If you don't have a retail store, don't put it in. And then it's going to say what URL, like the website. You just type that in. That's going to be your anchor URL. That's the information that if you're on Facebook, Instagram, anywhere that you can put a link, that's what you want to do. If you want to put it into a blog article, anything like that, that's going to trigger Google to instantly index you. And the other part to this is Google will also create events. So let's say that you have an event happening. It could be a new product launch. It creates events and it weights events much higher than anything else. You can create social posts within Google, and then it'll give you a code and you can put that into wherever you want. And here's another little nugget about this. You could take that blog article, you could take whatever you want to promote, and you could put it in your signature file in Gmail. I did not know this, but I know now that every single Gmail that is sent out is indexed. So if you've got a blog article and you have one, like let's say you put it in there for the week you want to promote, and you put it into your signature file and you send out 500 emails that week, it'll be indexed and they'll see that link in your Gmail.
So you are sending a confidential email.
And it's picking up your signature link. Yeah.
And Google indexes that email?
I had no idea, and now I know.
Confidential messages indexed.
Confidential messages, and it's not the content, it's the link.
Oh, it's the link. Yeah. Okay. And this is if you are using a Gmail.
Gmail.
Yeah. Okay. For those who don't use Gmail, this is not an option. But if you're using Gmail, most people do these days, put in your signature the link to your Google Business Profile anchor URL.
Yeah, and they also weight the more Google tools that you use, the better. So for instance, I'll do a presentation on press releases and I'll take the slides, and because I'm using Google Slides, I'll upload it and all of a sudden the slides are indexed. And now I'm known for press releases. So you can put out, like anytime you do any presentation that's not with a non-disclosure, you can promote that. I can give you an example on a car dealer. It's a car dealer in Seattle. It's a true story. They were spending $50,000 on SEO and they converted over to Google Business Profile. It was Google My Business back then. And one of the things that they decided to use is update the cars and the pricing every single day. So Google would come back and index them. Over a period of a year, year and a half, they went from $50,000 per month on SEO to just around $1,000 per month. That's how much money they saved and not losing position. It was the exact same traffic, if not more.
So getting Google to index you is the key. So of course, if you're refreshing content, Google will index you.
Yeah. So with us, every brand we have, we create blogs, high quality, really good quality blogs. And we'll add about every 3 months, we add another 250 words to the blogs. So we get the spider, Google to re-index us again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Google events. So this is under the Google events. So you're creating the events because events get indexed much faster and have higher value. Okay.
Yes, and offers. And yeah. Offers. So you can actually create your own offers. So I was at an event and somebody came up to me and they were saying they didn't understand. They got it mixed up with Google Shopping. You know, this has nothing to do with that. You'll still get into the search carousel with using Google Business Profile. So it's just a great tool. You can do it for free. You can have a VA doing it in literally 10 minutes a day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a great nugget. So let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Amazon Eternal Tools. This is something that nobody, again, not a lot of people are taking advantage of. Some people are taking advantage of certain tools, but other people are not taking advantage of the tools that are available. So the one that comes to mind, and these tools, by the way, they tell you how much extra money you're going to make. So the one that comes to mind, this is in catalog now. It used to be under inventory. So when you open up your Seller Central, you go in there and there's a tool that says listing quality optimization. This is very similar, but not as robust as Walmart's listing optimizer. But this one here, you'll see all your listings. And off to the right, it'll tell you a lot of information that you need to do. So it'll tell you five or six different things. It could be one, but it could be five or six. Some of them are going to be way out there. You might be selling a pet product and it'll say something about an audience type, you know, guys with beards. That, if it doesn't make sense, you can just pass it on. These are just things that their algorithm kind of picked up and you can choose to use it and add it to your listing or not. I did talk about Amazon posts. That's also important. The other aspect that I'm finding really big right now, because it builds a community, is Amazon Live. I'm not going to get into how to use Amazon Live. There's just a few basic things. You can either go and hire an influencer to help promote and push people over to your listing, or most brands can just, I was just on Amazon Live. You could literally just open up your phone. And if you want to be your own brand's ambassador, you download Live Creator and you just start. A lot of people are a little intimidated, but now for me, I have a stand for my iPhone and I can just hold it out here without having to use my hands, but you know, just go live. And I can go live for 15 minutes. I can tell all about the pain points. I could talk about whatever. And as I gain followers, now every time I gain a follower, then they get a notification. So I start to build more and more and more followers as I go. And this ties into another reason why you want followers is there's an area that you can go in. I think it's under brands. And you can use experiment, engagement. And you can go and target all of your followers. And I think they still allow repeat customers. And if you've got these followers that want your product, and you can say, hey, I'm just launching a new product, or hey, I got a 10% discount going off, you know, until X, you can do this all day long. And it's just the people that already love your brand are going to either get notification on a launch. So I sell soaps. I have new scents coming up all the time. So, okay, they're getting notifications. Easiest way to get extra sales is to tell people who already love your brand, you know, to come in and buy it by a discount, or just letting them know that it's something new. And a lot of the people that follow you don't expect huge discounts. So you could do a 5 or 10% off, and that's fine. It's not cold traffic. So people that have never heard of your brand, not going to trust you. People that have heard of your brand and love it, you don't have to convince them. So anyways, that's a biggie. So if you can build your brand community, even drive people back, and I'm going down a couple rabbit holes here, but if you can drive people using external traffic to your brand feed page, and you know, just get people to follow, that would be great. Or drive people to your storefront, and on your storefront banner, put a big red arrow pointing down to follow, you know, and just make the page look incredible, and you'll be really surprised. That knife company that I talked about, so they had people come over, they had people take a look, they had they've already got quite a few followers, but over a period of probably 6 months to around 6-8 months, they ended up with about 700 followers. Now they have over 1,000 followers, which is ideally what you want to be in. They've just been putting out new product all the time and been able to market to people. But on their storefront, they have the big follow, and they also have their recipe book, and they also have a 52-week really good meal planner. So if as long as you can make it engaging, you'll get people to follow you. So that's on the influencer side. And also, you've probably heard, not everybody's been invited into this, but if you're lucky enough to, and you have a great brand, Amazon's got something that's trying to fight with TikTok right now, and that's called Amazon Inspire. So all you're doing is you'll have a little light bulb on the bottom of your mobile phone. You press it. Pick whatever category you want. Anyways, you'll start to see different things that you can promote and use with Amazon Inspire. Now, unfortunately, I'm in Canada and I'm not getting access to it yet, but I know a lot of people in the States that are just loving it. So that's something I hope will come up soon. Now the other area.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
You've given so many, you're like a machine gun, one after the other. So brand feed. Yep. I heard you mention brand feed. Describe to us, what is a brand feed? How does one access it? How does one use it?
Okay. So when you go and register for posts, so Amazon Posts, once you get brand registry, you're going to have the ability to enroll in posts. Now, if you're having problems with this, check this out, because we hear about this all the time. People say, oh, I don't have access. Go into your user permissions and make sure that once you're registered, there's going to be a bunch of new categories there and you have to turn it on to enable it. Then you can go to posts.amazon.com. Actually, I think you can go to posts directly right now with the new interface on the left-hand side, but post.amazon.com will get you there. You register, you add your name or your brand's already there. You can upload a logo, and then you can take social media and your posts, like any style of posts, and you can start adding them. Now, I'll expand on this a bit. It's like any social media. You want to get high engagements. The knife company Their best engagement so far has been 200,000 impressions, and they don't tell you how many sales you get. Like, it is a funnel. They'll tell you up until how many people clicked on your listing, but they won't actually show you the sales yet. But you will notice that there is an increased conversion rate, because people, it takes five clicks for a post to make a sale. So they've got to really like your product or like what they're seeing. And we've noticed that you'll see, once you start using posts on a regular basis, that your conversion rate will go up, which, you know, that helps out with everything. Posting with this will create something called a brand feed. And the brand feed is something that you can just direct traffic over. So let's say that you're on one of your posts. To see all of your posts, it's very simple. Click, not the image, but click the logo, and then you'll see your brand feed, and you'll see the URL for your brand feed, and you can just put that into any social media campaign that you want to get people to come over, to try to create a like campaign, to do whatever you'd like to get people engaged on that page. So that's what your brand feed is. And so many people don't realize it. And I do want to stress one other thing. When you see the first post, like there's something that you'll see, like all these posts on a carousel, they're not all yours. They could be a mixture of your competitors. So that's the thing you got to be aware of, is that when you do start putting a lot of posts up there, your competitors can too, and they can come on your page, you can go on their page. And that's why experimenting with posts and the quality of posts and engagement is so important. Knife company, we actually went to chefs all over and we got them to write recipes for us. So not only is this, wow, this is a really cool, you see the chef with the knife and now you have this recipe. Wow, that's cool. Then we went to a culinary school and we did the exact same thing. Here are free knives to the students. All we want you to do is tag us on recipes. And now we've got these recipes that we can continue to do every week and people look forward to it. So again, once you get that following, you'll start to see that. And they don't allow for comments or anything right now, but once they do, it'll be great, because I know that that engagement will come in and play on where these are showing up, how frequently they're showing up. So yeah. that's a little bit about posts.
Yeah. So brand registered sellers go to Amazon, register for Amazon Post. Yep. You may need to turn it on. And if it's not turned on, go to your settings, have it, figure it out, and then turn it on. And then go to Amazon Posts and just keep posting stuff. And that will show up in your brand feed. In addition, right there on your storefront homepage, put an arrow for people to that points to follow, so that people can click and follow your brand. And then that's what is going to keep pushing them your brand feed. With the posts that you post will go inside the brand feed, right?
Right. And on that page, by the way, so if you go, you know, if you're pushing people over to that storefront, you'll automatically see posts. And if you want to know what your URL is, just click that and you'll see your brand feed pop up. But it's on there for people, if they want to go and see your posts, there's actually a tab there that happens as soon as you sign up, you click on it, and now you can see all your posts.
That's great. Norm, I started counting and then I kind of lost count at six. So we covered quite a few. So this was great. We usually take a subject and then dissect it. And then sometimes we move on to more high level, but this was real actionable stuff that people, I'm sure, will love. So let's get to know you a little bit now. So tell us, you said you were based in Canada. So tell us, that's not really my interest more. I want to know where you grew up. Share with us how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Well, I was born in Montreal, again in Canada, moved down to Ontario, moved back to Montreal. So I've been all over. So French, English. And then I ended up doing a lot of work and studying in the States, down in New Hampshire, Boston area. Then just kind of went back and forth. When I got married, we ended up in Southern Ontario. Then we decided to move north. I'm up about 2 hours north of Toronto, so I'm outside of the city, and we have more cows than people up this way. And that's about it. But I have lived, I don't know why we changed, but we were living in Hawaii back in 2000 for about 5 years, or 2010, 2013. And it was beautiful. My wife likes four seasons. I hate it, but we're here because happy, you know, the saying, you know, happy wife.
Oh yeah. Well, how did you, I understand the places you lived, but how did you get to be, when did you realize that you became interested, when, as a kid, you know, business end of things, when was the first sign?
It's probably my dad. He was a, you know, it's overused, but if there was ever a serial entrepreneur, it was him. And he was hardworking. He used to work for a company. Then he started his own company. And I don't know how many companies he owned at one point, but I'd go in there after school and, you know, I got literally 10 cents an hour and all the pop I could drink. So that was my first starting wage. In the holidays, I was expected to work at the different factories that he had. And I got to learn a lot. I got to learn a lot about people, the difference in people. I was, I think this really helped me deal with all walks of life because of all the different people I met, from, you know, people that were having some struggles right up to very affluent people. And my first business, and this is our first self-funding business, was between me and three other guys in high school, that we actually had an incorporated company that we were trying to do rock promotion. And I think it lasted 6 months to a year. And then we all broke apart and we all went to college, and we never did a lot with it, but it was cool having a company. And then when I was in college, one of the ways I funded my college tuition is I started a company there to do video production, and we got a couple gigs from the government, which were awesome. Government pays well. And then ended up going back working in my dad's factory for a while. He got sick. I did something completely different, got into grandfather clocks. I had Bulova contracts, so I was doing all the clocks for Bulova. And then free trade came in, wiped that business out, but worked a couple of years, or sorry, a couple of months for a different company. Other than that, I've always owned my own company. In between there somewhere, I went into the military. So I was in the reserves for a couple of years. And then ever since then, I've been involved with doing something, you know, a lot of partners, a lot of strategic partners.
This is what I want to know. So did your dad mandate you working, or was it you became interested and said, okay, come, you can work, I'll pay you 10 cents an hour? How did that?
I think I got pretty excited at 10 cents. Like, I'm an old guy. 10 cents was pretty big back in the day when I was about 8, 9, or 10.
Did he, like, as his kid, say, okay, you're going to be working here from now on, or did you want to do that?
I got excited about it. I always was, and I don't know if this was my dad rubbing off on me, but I always got excited about going to work and making some money. And
what was your relationship like with your dad? Did you?
Oh, awesome. Well, actually, back in the day, I was kind of a rebel. I wanted to grow my hair really long, and you know, this is back in the early 70s, and you know, this is just coming out of the 60s, and he was a very conservative guy. So everything I wanted to do, he was pretty much against. But at the end of the day, working like with him, it was always great. So I know at one point in this is in Montreal, he'd drive me in. He had a huge, with this one factory, like 1,200 people in this one factory. And I got to work some of the machines. And what was really cool is I was the only English speaking person there. And so we had a kind of a fun thing going where all the French guys would, you know, at the lunch table would have to try to speak English, and I would try to speak French. And it was just kind of fun. But, you know, there was always father and son struggles. But, you know, going to work, that was never an issue. I got, you know, somebody said there was a job around, I would definitely pick it up and just, you know, do it. It was just part of it. It's part of life, waking up and going on a holiday.
I think you were learning, right? So anytime you were working, you were learning stuff also. That's what I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's the people experience that was probably one of the biggest life lessons is, you know, being able to talk to people, you know, any type of person. You know, there might be people that were having some real struggles. There might've been having addictions. I mean, I saw it all. I worked in a factory. I saw it all. I saw workers where that's where I was. I saw junior management, senior management. I got to go and at times negotiate and work with the government for some government contracts that we had. There was all sorts of things. And my dad always would say, you know, would always try to get me involved with things that probably were outside of my comfort zone, but he thought that I could handle it. So yeah, there was a lot of really fun things. And towards 2000 or so, I think it might've been a little bit after that, but we got to work together. He saw one of my companies was a promotional marketing company that we were working in China 20, 25 years ago. He saw what we were doing. He saw the success we were doing. He says, "Hey, I'm interested in opening up, you know, something. This is contract manufacturing. Would you like to, and your brother, get into this business with me?" And so he wanted to get involved with EVA foam and a variety of other types of contract, mostly arts and crafts and stuff like that. Anyways, we ended up owning two factories in Taiwan. We had the facility he already had in Auburn, Maine, up here in Canada. And we ran a factory in Taiwan for a bunch of years until it got purchased. And that was an experience. And then from that, it led to specialty packaging and having understanding of that, the understanding of fulfillment centers. And of course, you know, I was already involved with e-commerce. So yeah, it was a really well-rounded MBA in the streets.
This is beyond MBA in my book. I mean, this is like, you were conditioned to be a real business person. This is great. So Norm, I'm sure you've got a lot of other things to do. Tell us quickly a little bit about this Lunch with Norm. What is that about? Because that's your brand, right? What is Lunch with Norm?
Yeah, it's Lunch with Norm is my podcast that I have Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at noon Eastern Standard. And all we're doing is trying to help online sellers become better online sellers. Right now, I think I mentioned to you, I've got this challenge going on because I'm not a product influencer, but I'm trying to do this. My son challenged me to this with Lunch with Norm. So now we've called it Lunch with Norm Deals. And anybody who sends me over a product, we go on Amazon Live for free. We create a shoppable video for free. We put it on our social media, and in return, all we're asking is trying to get follows. So I'm surrounded. You should see my area all around me with all these products that I'm trying to do and promote. but this is just a new challenge. We do a challenge every year, by the way. And this one was way bigger than I ever expected, just in time-wise. But typically, I'm trying to help people learn. In this instance, I'm learning and I'm training people, or like not training. There's no course. I'm not asking for any money or anything. What I'm doing is I'm showing people my journey on how to become a product influencer, from going from zero product influencer followers to 100,000 this year. So that's what I'm done. That's what I'm doing.
That's great. One of the best ways to learn something is to teach it, right?
Wow. this is a major teaching job.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, this was great, Norm. So tell us, how can people reach you? Give us your contact information.
Sure. Pretty simple. You can either go to norm@AMZ, like Amazon, AMZ.club. That's the best email. You could look on the internet. I've got all sorts of social media up there. You could either just lunch with Norm and you should get to either the YouTube channel, Instagram. I mean, you name it, we're there.
This was great. Thank you, Norm. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks again. And this brings us to the end of another episode. I'll see you in the next.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.